to give you a little behind the scenes look on how this came to be. Me and BJ have known each other forever, so we like to kid around. So I came down early Saturday morning. I met BJ in the morning. We went to lunch, where we had breakfast at Original House of Pancakes. Chocolate chip pancakes, by the way, are wonderful. They are not paying me to say that. I'm just offering that up. So we go there, and BJ's like, oh, man, you're in town. I'm preaching both sermons tomorrow. Why don't you do one for me? I thought, that's hilarious. That's funny. And so I thought, we'll move on. I'll have a great weekend. So next thing I know, I hear John Hafer, this is BJ. Can you give me a call back? I need to talk to you about a couple things. Thought, okay, maybe that's unrelated to what we just went through. I won't have to worry about it. So John doesn't answer. Thank you, John, for not answering the first time. I appreciate that, not the second time. We come to the building. PJ is showing me his brand new office. I'm loving it. It's great. It's beautiful. So I step away to go to use the restroom. I come back, and there's BJ on the phone with John. I thought, oh, no. No, he's going to put me to work. But they're talking about the tabernacle when I walk in. I thought, I was right. They were talking about something different, right? I sit down. I think BJ hangs up the phone. It's all good. Click. I hear no more John. BJ goes, you're on tomorrow night. I don't have a say in this at all, apparently. So with 26-hour notice, here I am. I kidded a lot about the aggravation of coming here. I'd love to speak for you guys. And if you aren't aware with me, I see there's a lot of new faces. I haven't preached here actually in a year or so. I'm from, as BJ said, Tacoma, Washington, where I am one of the preachers there. And we have, you're familiar with the area. We had just bought a new building in Tacoma where we are absolutely flourishing in a new area. I would ask for continued prayers of our congregation as we continue to grow. We were at 75 to 80 on a Sunday morning. We're up to 95 to 100 now. So we're growing, and the gospel is just on fire. So I would continue to ask for prayers. But enough from me, enough of that. Let's get into the sermon. Let's get into God's word. Let's try to see how we can further our Christian walk and how we can be more like Christ and how we can be better people. We're going to look at James chapter 1. In the first part of it, James talks about testing our faith and how we deal with our faith and trials, right? And he gives you this great part where we think about how we consider it and count it as joy, as happiness when we're going through trials. Man, isn't that a tough verse to swallow? For me, it isn't. So James continues on and he goes through and he gets to verse 19 and he kind of switched subjects on us. And I thought it's a nice really break in the scriptures there. And he tells us that we need to do three certain things. My sermon is going to be based around really the idea of our relationships with others. And if I can get the PowerPoint up and running. I'm seeing things here, but I'm not seeing things here. So there, I'm going to just describe the rest of the sermon, apparently. There's a person here, a person here, and a person here.
Oh. We should have turned that on.
We probably should have. I should have probably done that. So as that's getting booted up, you'll see there's a picture of lovely, good-looking young people, and there's words there. But really, next to a relationship with our God and our Savior, and BJ, you got a whole bunch of stuff there. Right there. I don't want to step on it. Next to a relationship with God, we have this need for happiness, right? We want to be happy. We want to be a happy people. So I started thinking about that. What makes Travis happy? I have this really need for sports, but right now my truck just went through a $3,500 change of a blown gasket, and now it's seriously becoming a money pit. I have this eye on this beautiful, beautiful Chevy Silverado, 2,500, three-quarter ton. Wow, it's beautiful. It's expensive. It'd be worth it. But is that going to make me happy? Well, how about a brand new television that I can watch my sports on, 75 inches? I was walking by the store, and I thought, oh, man, my heart earned. I thought, that would make me happy. No, that wouldn't make me happy. You know what makes me happy? It was renewed just yesterday while I was having breakfast and lunch with BJ, talking with Brandon at Sherry's till 1 in the morning, hanging out with Nick. You know what gives us that sense of happiness is a close friendship with someone, isn't it? Your best friend. And that could be any source of it. It could be someone you've known forever. Could be your spouse. Guys, it should be your spouse. It could be your child. It could be a cousin. It could be someone you've known since you were a little kid. But that's really where we get this sense of contentment, of happiness. When you know that you have someone so close to you that you could cry with, that you can talk with, that you could be happy with, that you can share the most intimate parts of yourself. So we see this in our relationship, and that looks good, doesn't it? They look happy. But what about the flip side? When that relationship is strained or soured, when you're going through tough times and you're fighting with this person. I know for me, having histories of having to deal with this, it's what's constantly on my mind. When I have a fight with my best friend, I don't know what to do. I so eagerly want to fix that issue, but sometimes time can heal and you don't know what's going on and it consumes you. And so from that aspect, I want to look at how we can further our relationship and how we can become better friends of everybody. Really through the idea of James in James chapter 1 and verse 19. Read with me verse 19. It says, "Know this, my beloved brothers, my friends. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of a man does not produce the righteousness of God." He says it's simple how we can be better persons and how we need to act with others is we need to be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. So how do we help succeed in our relationship? So I'm not going to go through each one. I want to just look at the first one. I will look at the idea of being quick to hear. I love this picture. I absolutely love this picture. Of a lady, she just can't get a hold into him. It says, "Oh, we might as well get out the microphone and yell up." I found this cute, neat little illustration. It says, Charles Swindoll, who was a writer, once found himself with too many commitments in too few days. We feel like that sometimes, or we got so much going on, you don't feel like there's enough hours in the day. So he got very nervous and tense about it. He says in a book, "I was snapping at my wife and children and choking down my food at mealtimes, feeling irritated at every unexcused and unexpected interruptions throughout the day. But before long," he says, "things around our home started reflecting the pattern of my hurry-up style. It was becoming unbearable." We can relate to that, can't we? He says in a memory, "I distinctly remember after supper and dinner one evening, the words of our young daughter, Colleen, 8 years old. She wanted me to tell me something very important that happened to her at school." Parents, you know those. "Mommy, mommy, daddy, let me tell you what happened today." Well, really, it's for us, it's insignificant. But for her, it's the world, right? So she comes up to daddy and says, "Daddy, I really want to tell you something. And I'll tell you really fast." How crushing would that be? Suddenly realizing her frustration, Charles Swindoll answered, "Honey, you can tell me, and you don't have to tell me really fast. Say it slowly." Oh, well, that's maturity for an 8-year-old. But he says, "I'll never forget her answer. She said, 'Then listen slowly.'" I see smiles, but really think about that. From a child who can see that her dad has got so much going on that she realized he doesn't have enough time, but "I just want a second to tell you this really neat thing." To just listen slowly. So I want to digest what those three words and what James says here in James 1:9 over the next few slides, and then the sermon's going to be yours. So how do we in our relationships with each other, and we can also apply this with God, be able to be quick to hear? Because I want to be someone who's able to listen. So how does we really, as we digest this, learn how to build up those relationships? Well, listening shows you just flat out care. Turn with me over here into Philippians chapter 2. We're all very familiar with Ephesians chapter 2. It's really how we have this attitude, an example of Jesus. But Paul starts out in verse 4 on how we are to be interested and show in others really what we want for ourselves, right? When I'm talking to someone, when I'm talking to you, or when I'm talking to my folks, or I'm talking to my boss, I like to be heard, right? When I'm having a conversation, I don't want them to just be thinking about something else or having something going on. My boss has ADHD like myself, so I can see this. When you're having a conversation with him, he has a stress ball in his hands. And that's to keep the energy away so he can concentrate on it. We had a kind of a blow up at work on Friday. One of the ladies was having a problem at work with a customer, and he, with the stress building up, grabbed his stress ball so he could listen to her complaint. But he kept squeezing it, and it kept getting harder and harder, and she kept looking at him like, this guy's not listening to me. I have a problem. But he was letting out his frustrations so he could be that person for her. And Paul, it kind of talks about this in Philippians 2:4. It says, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. It's not all about me. I wish it was from my point, but it's not. From my standpoint now, as I enter my work, it's all about you. And it's all about how I can translate what James is saying here to you. So really, how does listening build up those relationships? It shows that you care about this person. Raquel Welch said this, you can't fake listening. It shows. I've been burned a few times by this. Guys, and I gave this sermon up a while ago up to at home, and I had a lot of husbands come up to me, and he goes, you remember that point where you said you can't fake listening? Let me give you an example. And it'd be over and over and over again. Guys coming up and goes, man, that was a great point. I've tried that. The game will be on and the wife comes in. He's like, honey, you can talk. I can watch the game while also listening to her. I guarantee you, I'll tell you a secret. He's not listening to you. But really, listening shows that we care. But it also shows that we respect the other person. In sports, and this will be seriously my only sports analogy, I tend to use those a lot. In a football game, you have the opening play where the teams come out and they run a play. Most of the time, it's a running play. And the team, after they break up and they break the scrum that really is the first play of the game, the quarterback will then run to the sideline or run to a place where there's not a lot of noise, and the play caller is then giving him the next play. So he's got one job. Well, the rest of the other 10 guys on that team go to what's called a huddle, right? And they are to sit there and wait. From my experiences and what pro athletes say, that's where most of the guys get their frustrations out. Wide receivers come in. Man, why didn't the quarterback throw the ball to me? Linemen are like, why didn't you block better? Or why isn't this happening? There's a lot of complaining. But there's an unwritten rule that as soon as the quarterback takes that knee or steps into the huddle, everything stops. There's silence. There's no more complaining. There's no more talking. The quarterback has control of the huddle. That's in a neat example of that, of respect. Of a good football team that has respect for the one who's talking. There's been examples of, like, my University of Washington football team where we're not so decent, and you guys have the Ducks down here, that our huddles are more like my life sometimes in my desk. It's all over the place. There's people talking. They're not hearing the play. There's not respect for what's happening because it's all about me and my problems and what's happening to me. Why aren't you giving me the ball? Why aren't you giving me attention? We have this idea that it shows the respect for the other person. So when we're talking to somebody, maybe we can take into Proverbs 18. I have it up on the board, but also if you want to turn there, we're going to read a couple other verses. In Proverbs chapter 18, verses really 1 and 2, that idea of showing respect for someone. When you're in a brace with a conversation or you're talking with someone, You can have this same attitude and idea. In Proverbs 18, verse 1, it says, whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire. He breaks out against all sound judgment. But verse 2, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. The book of Proverbs, and we'll mention and we'll go throughout several times, of hearing more than speaking. I'm a big fan of 1 plus 1 equals 2 because I can figure out that formula. And you see over and over again, if you just add them up and add them up, that you can see that 1 plus 1 equals 2, that you can say that I need to speak more than I say. I found this quote. It says, most of the successful people I've known who do more listening than talking. Because they're always bringing in more wisdom. They're trying to glean everything from little person. Franklin Roosevelt said this of a little story, and it's a little cute little story. He says, he often had to endure long receiving lines. So when people would come to the White House and they'd hold galas, everybody would like to meet the president, right? So they would put him in a line to where you could walk down, shake his hand, say something, and he would respond, right? And he's the president. You'd think you'd be paying attention. But he complains that no one did. He said he complained that no one really paid any attention to what is said. One day, during a reception, he decided to try an experiment. And I think this is genius. To each person who passed down the line, he shook his hand and he murmured, I murdered my grandmother this morning. I think maybe that's going a little too far. I probably would have said something else. You know, maybe I have mismatching socks or something like that. He says, the guests responded with phrases like this, marvelous, keep up the good work, we are proud of you, God bless you, sir. It was not till the end of the line, literally in his story, the last person, while greeting the ambassador from Bolivia, that his words were actually heard. The ambassador listened, leaned over, and whispered, I'm sure she had it coming. That's not the point. Don't murder your grandma. She didn't have it coming. But it was just this neat idea that sometimes we're so focused on, I need to get what I say, we don't hear the response. We don't have that respect for the person. So how we do that really is for caring, respecting, and really love. If I truly love that person, then I'm able to listen. That's why I love the ears on the heart. By listening, we really put aside our own agenda. We put it away. Saying, I'm going to do everything for that person. We give them 100% of our own attention. 1 Corinthians 16, 14 says, let all, everything, not part of it, not the part that I'm interested in, not the part that seems pretty cool, but everything be done in what? Love. That seems pretty simple, doesn't it? Because if we can go to the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13, and we see that love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous. I heard Bobby Cannon, he's coming up for a meeting for us next year, and I've been playing a lot of his CDs. And he made a great point in one of his sermons, and he was talking about the love chapter and talking about love. And he came down to the end, and he said, you know what? This isn't all is well washed. We can talk about it, all about love, and we can talk about what it means if I'm not these things. And he said, I replace love with Bob. Bob is patient. Bob is kind. Bob is not jealous. And I thought, wow, that's neat. And then he finished it up with replace love with God. God is patient. God is kind. God is not jealous. So we can listen to God and we want to be there for him, that we can maybe try to do the same thing in our relationship with our relationships with each other. And Stephen Covey says this, most people do not listen with the intent to understand, but what? The intent to reply. Guilty. 100%. Because sometimes I have these moments where as soon as somebody says something, I have this funny little thing I want to say, or it's a neat little thing that I have to get out there. So I focus on not forgetting that thought because I have the intent to reply while they're trying to say something important. While I'm trying to impress them with this little quick little thing I got, I'm missing the whole point. So am I really listening with this form of love? So how do we listen? We're going to look at really some simple points that I actually took from a psychology website and a psychiatrist in our own congregation. I went up to her because her job is to listen, right? All she does is listen, and it blows my mind that she does this. She just sits there, takes notes, and listens. I thought, if I'm going to find some practical ways on how to listen, that's it right there, isn't it? And so I went online and I looked at some really biblical principles that the book of Proverbs, and we can find in Ephesians, that help us to just listen and how we can do that. Number one, I found it over and over and over again. And she came up, Jeannie Campbell came up to me as soon as I asked this. She grabbed both of my hands in her hands and like a little child. I felt like I was a little child. And she said, the number one thing to listen, to be a good listener, stop talking. I laughed, right? I thought that was funny. She grabbed me again by hands. She squeezed tighter. She said, stop talking. For me and PJ, that's tough. Jack, when he's here, that's even tougher for him. I call Jack 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes, Jack. Half an hour, 45 minutes later. Usually I'm listening, trying to get in a word edgewise. Stop talking. That's why we need to put duct tape on our mouth. James says, everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak. So stop talking. When we think about these things, we think about when someone else is talking and we're trying to reply, we're trying to listen to what they're saying. I have these urges to interrupt, or I have these urges to give an answer without really hearing. I think about Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 13. And it says, and actually verse 12, it says, before destruction, a man's heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor. Verse 13, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame. To hear the whole picture, to listen to the whole things. Kind of two quotes that do the same thing, and you probably all heard these. But it says, we have two ears and one mouth, so we should listen more than we say, right? And I get made fun of, but I have larger ears. And as growing up, they kept getting larger and larger and larger, and my head kept getting larger and larger and larger. And Mom used to quote this to me. And she says, Travis, you have such huge ears. You should be able to listen like no one else. Thanks, Mom. Mark Twain says this, if we were supposed to talk more than we listen, we would have two tongues and one ear. Picture that for a second, how odd that would look. Literally, we don't really want to start thinking about how do I get another tongue and move my ear over to my nose area. But really, we can see the point. It's to just plain stop talking. A couple more, Jeannie said in this way, it says, you need to prepare yourself to listen. That's actually a really neat thought. I prepare for a sermon for hours, right? I'm focusing, I'm literally nitpicking, like right before I'm up here, I'm checking my scriptures. I'm trying to be fully prepared. You know, when I'm starting to have a conversation with somebody, I may take my jacket off, I may, you know, look at them or something like that. I never really thought about preparing myself. Jeannie said to relax. That's actually kind of interesting. Relax. Take note of this. Focus on the speaker. Put other things out of our mind. Don't we do that for the Lord's Supper? We're instructed that over and over again, to put the worldly thoughts out of our mind, to focus on what Jesus Christ did for us. Maybe we should take that same vigil attitude that we have for that sovereign occasion into speaking with others. 1 Peter 5:8 says we need to be sober, but we need to be more of that. We need to be focused, to be someone, because Satan is roaring around like a lion. Maybe I should take that idea in my preparedness for listening to somebody. And then, big one for me, remove distractions. Remember that stress ball? Maybe he should have tossed that away. Get rid of it. I like to doodle sometimes when someone's talking. It helps me relax. People don't like that too much when I'm sitting here drawing a stick figure. I like either shuffling papers or looking out the window or fingernails or anything, something similar. Because people read that. A lot of our communication is nonverbal. What happens if I'm sitting there, I'm having a conversation, let's say with Dave Larson right here. He's talking to me, but all I'm doing is looking out this, well, there's not a window here. Imagine there's a mansion where I'm just looking out the window at the birds. What's Dave going to think? Dave, what do you think?
Linguistics says that you're not concerned with what I have to say.
I'm not concerned with what he has to say. But I'm actually listening. But does Dave know that? Dave, you can't read my mind, can you? That's not one of your powers? No? Getting away of those distractions, especially for the heavy conversations in life. So when people talk, Ernest Hemingway said, listen completely. Most people truly never listen. And so we continue on really to our last couple, and then the sermon is going to be yours, and we'll bring this up to the end. It says really to be patient. Really get rid of the desire to interrupt. Wait until the other person is finished. This is never good in a conversation. Yeah, I gotta go. Wait until they're finished. Because sometimes just being patient can mean the meaning of someone's life, faith, their own conversation. I found this in a book I read. It wasn't really about prostitution. It was about a book about listening. But the expert of this, it says, of teenage prostitutes, women, during interviews after they're caught in a San Francisco study, were asked this question. Is there anything you needed most and couldn't get? Really, basically, how they're trying to figure out how they got to this point in their lives, to where they were selling themselves. Their response, every time, preceded by sadness and tears, were unanimous. What I needed most was someone to listen. And someone who cared enough to listen to me. Wow. Coming from the actual source. Someone who just needed to listen. Maybe to just be a little bit more patient could be meaning to the world. Because sometimes a conversation, and most of the time with me, a conversation can start out with, well, look at the weather. It's sunny today, or it's rainy today. And you think, well, I don't want to talk about the weather. Really, it's probably one of the most boringest things to me is the weather. It's raining. That's what's Washington and Oregon. It's the Northwest. But almost every time, if I'm just a little patient, just a little, they bring up the real problem. They bring up the real reason they want to have a conversation. And sometimes those are seriously the best conversations I have. Just being a little bit more patient. That blew away really fast. But in Ephesians chapter 4 and 2, we have that same idea. And also in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 14, it says, we urge you, brethren, admonish the ruling, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak. Be patient with everyone. And sometimes we want to be patient. We want to have all these things. And as I mentioned earlier, the last thing is, how do we listen? It's really by nonverbal communication. As I was doing with Dave and as I demonstrated, I started thinking about that. Yeah, we do a lot of that, do that. And I started thinking about what Jeannie said, and she said, and this is an estimated number, but some estimated, and she said about 75. I found others that said 60, that 65 to 70% of our communication is nonverbal. That's a huge number. And then I started looking for it, right? I started being more aware of it, and then I started noticing when something sad's happening, everybody's looking down. When someone wants that gain of power, their hands are back and I dominate the room. Or when someone continually is blinking, they're trying to fight back tears sometimes. And so I started being aware of these certain things. But what does that mean? To see those things happening, I have to be listening and I have to be focused on that person. Because you can see it, I referenced, you got these four or five people up here. She looks like she's just completely disinterested. Maybe you're talking and she wants to talk. the lady, the older lady, looks just completely depressed. You can see that, right? You can kind of read into it, and sometimes we're wrong. The lady looks bored. He looks like, man, I don't know which world I'm in. And he just looks completely distressed. And we can see that. We can see the ideas. We can see the gestures, the facial expressions, the eye movements. All that's important because we don't just listen with our ears. We listen with our eyes. Two ears, two eyes, one mouth. So we have all of this. And there's really, the main point is there's a lot of differences really between listening and hearing. So how do we listen? How do we bring this all back to the close in our last couple of minutes? It's not about me. It's about you, or it's about that person. So don't redirect the attention to ourselves. Philippians chapter 2, the verse we read, it was in verse 4. We want to read verse 3. It's up on the board. It says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility in mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves." That's the key. It's right there. When you're having a conversation, when you want to be more quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, it's putting that person in front of them. Like we mentioned in Charles Swindoll, when he was talking to his daughter and he had so much going on, she just wanted to say one little thing. He realized she's more important than I am. All these commitments I have, these things going on, they're important, but not to the importance of having time with my daughter. Having a conversation with my husband or wife, or having a conversation with a friend or a boss or someone out in the world who's looking for the answer or looking for Christ. Listen and put this idea that they are way more important than me. It helps because it's true. Because then we can make the application, our lives should be for Christ because he's more important. Because it's not about me, it's about him. It's about how I can listen to his words and how I can talk to other people that can just be a light to this world so I can have ears like these. It's a cute little picture. I love it. It's humorous. But maybe open our ears a little bit. You know, we cup our ears, bring them up. Let's be more like James says, but everyone must be quick to hear. That is my sermon. I hope you have been able to glean something out of it. It's nothing like we broke new ground here. What we did is we tried to add to the foundation, right? We tried to put up some walls. And if I ever get the chance to come back, and hopefully I will sometime, maybe we can do the next series, being slow to speak, and then eventually talking about anger, and that's really a fun one. But how we can build up the foundation. Maybe we can put on a roof, and maybe we can put on a door, and maybe we can start inviting people in, because it takes that kind of commitment and determination to be the best Christian that we want to be more like Christ. And that is our goal. So I have this sermon has not been for the sake of an invitation, but if there are any here that have been struggling in life, that have been trying to waver, that they don't know really the questions or the answers, and they don't know really which way to go, this is what this time is for. It's ready to ask those questions, to commit to Christ, to go through the plan of salvation. Or if you have been saved and you've just been knocked down by life and Satan's just killing you and he's deceiving you and he's tempting you and you've committed to that, but you want to fix that and you're not sure how or if you can do it alone, you're not alone. You're more important than me. I want to spend that time, and then before I have to leave, give you to BJ so he can spend that time to fix it and help you, because your soul is the most important thing to me and to everybody else. So our invitation song is Jesus is Tenderly Calling. Listen, Jesus is Tenderly Calling, as we stand and sing our invitation song.